Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And if the 29th of December is the day on your calendar in which you currently exist, don't you love the way I said that?
I'm not sure.
Then you're certainly welcome to give us a call at 254-773-1400. We closed out the last hour talking about the wall. Let's get back off the subject of the wall for a moment. What we're talking about
I didn't finish the piece that I said there's a core cause that can be fixed.
Right.
Let me hit that real quick because we went long.
We can talk about immigration, but the argument about whether or not the wall should go up is kind of moot. But go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I agree with that. The idea here is that if we look at immigration and who's funding it, it's not funded in large part by drugs. It's not funded in large part by human trafficking, though there is a component of that, and both of those. They're not good. It's funded by you and me and by everybody that's listening right now. If you go to a hotel, if you go to a restaurant, if you go to get your yard done or eat chicken or all number of things, there's probably illegal immigrant labor involved there. You are paying them. And if we can pull back the covers a little bit and say, where is it happening? It's happening in places where there's fraudulent documents, sometimes being provided by the employer, most of the time being provided by other illegal immigrants to illegal immigrants. And they use these and they get away with it. Now, if we looked at a system very similar to what the caller was saying at last hour, where an employer, very much like Texas Workforce Commission, goes to a government agency and says, I have need for X number of employees, and I can't find them in my area. I've had a help wanted sign up for 3 weeks, and I haven't had anybody apply. I need a dishwasher, or I need a cook, or I need a yard worker.
Yeah, yard workers.
Something like that. Then that goes out to this service, and it's connected to immigration, so that people that want to immigrant apply for those jobs. And they can be given by lottery, they can be given by whatever, they get a background check done on them from their home country that says that they are on the up and up, they're allowed to come in here and work, we issue a visa, we come in. Right now, we're busy trying to fix the soggy sheetrock from the leak in the roof. And we're arguing about how much money we need to use to reinforce the wall when we haven't fixed the leak. The leak is that we're still paying money to these illegal immigrants. And as long as we have money and it's just waiting for them to get across the border, they're going to keep coming across the border because that's the way the market works. If someone will pay you enough money to do it, and by comparison to where they're from, it's a lot of money, they're going to come across the border.
If you want to see a wave of people pour across the border,
right,
shut down the border.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is, we used to have, as a percentage and numbers-wise, illegal immigration is down to a fraction of what it was 20 years ago. And the reason is we instituted, maybe it was more than 20 years, a little over 20 years ago, we instituted a program allowing American factories to hire people and set up assembly positions when they couldn't do it in the United States because there wasn't enough people to hire.
Right.
In northern Mexico. So we had basically a free trade zone just across the border in northern Mexico. So a lot of people who wanted employment in Mexico and wanted to better themselves economically simply went to work for an American corporation in Mexico. Now, shut down border trade, and every one of those are shut down, not to mention the damage it does to the United States economy, huge damage to the people.
Earnings of corporations get knocked on the chin.
And those people who were working and earning for Mexico, a reasonable wage, suddenly don't have jobs. And they will pour across the border because it's the alternative is to starve. And that isn't a very good alternative.
There is a key here in that I think the vast, vast majority of people believe that slavery is wrong. at this point. I hope so. I think so, and I would be a little bit shocked to hear that it wasn't the case. But it didn't get rid of itself on its own. It took a piece of technology to do it, a series of pieces of technology. Human history from the beginning and before had slavery as a component. And it wasn't based on race. It was just whomever you could capture and make them do your work. So for many thousands of years, slavery was a thing until it wasn't. It stopped. And it would be nice to say it stopped out of ethics and morality. But the reality is that people's ethics and morality haven't changed that much over the millennia. People are nice to their kids. They're nice to other people's kids. Some pieces of it have changed. But it took a piece of technology, a new innovation coming out to make slavery not a necessary function of the market. For us to look back at it and say, that was horrible. Why did they ever do that? Well, why they did it forever before that point. Since the beginning, they did it. And now we're at a point where the vast majority of people look at it and say, this was a horrible event. It takes a piece of technology or a market-driven effort to do anything, and I could be talking about carbon credits right now. You know, it takes a market-driven effort, not a government restriction, to cause us to move away from pollution-causing things. If we have better technology that allows batteries and power to come out of the wind and out of the ocean and out of the sun, and it's less expensive than oil and gas, then that's what we're going to do because people want to do what's less expensive, the newer, better thing. Just ask coal about that. You can't save coal because it's being put out of business by a cheaper natural gas. If solar becomes cheaper, then natural gas is going to go out of business. That's the market. When the government steps in and says, you're burning too much natural gas, so I'm going to put a carbon credit on this, you get this big trade in carbon credit. It's this like conceptual item. Corporations are trading with each other. I know this because they're doing it in Europe. And it causes the amount of petroleum products to be used more, not less. When you try to make something harder to get, think about what that means in supply and demand. If you make immigration harder, it becomes more valuable. And that may be a good thing. Legal immigration should be a very, very valuable thing that people look at as an honor, not a right. And illegal immigration should be something that shouldn't happen. But if you make it too hard to get something, it's just like making a price too high on an item. Either people don't buy it or people steal it. And once you get the majority of people stealing it rather than buying it, that's a strange example, but if you use a speed limit, you can see it again. If the majority of people are speeding, then you've set the speed limit too wrong. The 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, the majority of people, and by majority, it was way above 80% of people, went faster than 55 miles an hour. You made lawbreakers out of the entire driving population by setting the maximum speed limit at 55. That's a problem. When we make the majority of people lawbreakers, the law is wrong, not the majority of people. And that's what we've got to come back to. We've got to fix the law at the same time that we're fixing whatever it is to allow that law to be easier followed. If that means a wall, then we build it at a time when the majority of immigration is still legal. And that prevents illegal immigration. But when it's already the majority, and that's a tough thing to say, but for the past year, the majority of immigration has been illegal immigration.
And again, though, you mentioned something that's very important to keep in mind. Like about 80% of illegal immigration is people who come into the United States legally. They don't cross the Mexican border, and they simply overstay their tourist visa. And when I say overstay, they never leave. And we don't have a system. Now, if you took $5 billion and you said, let's beef up the INS, the Immigration Naturalization Service, which is now called ICE.
ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
But the branch of the ICE that handles immigration and nationalization, if we choose to beef that up, and say, let's actually put a system in place and put and hire people to track the people who come in with visas and make sure they leave at the appropriate time, we would be addressing 80% of illegal immigration. I want to get back to something, though, here.
Okay.
It's very important. It's not a matter of whether you put a wall up or you don't put a wall up. It's not a matter of what we're doing with immigration or not doing with immigration. It's a matter of, from our perspective right now, the battle that's going on over what to do about it is having a dramatic effect on the stock market. It is producing some wild, it is the number one cause of the wild swings in the market that are going on right now. And the fact that the government is shut down has lowered the confidence rating that people have. For instance, the market typically moves based on reports from the Commerce Department, but we're not getting reports from the Commerce Department, which means we have this huge uncertainty. We have some indications that probably in 2020, and I say probably, the majority of economists now are calling for some sort of recession in 2020, possibly coming at some point in 2019. But we've lost the ability to get reliable data on what's going on in the economy, and it's kind of like you're driving along in the dark, in the fog, and somebody turns your headlights out. We're driving along now with parking lights, and we're driving along with uncertain information. This causes a lot of volatility in the market, and when there's you add to that the threats from the executive branch, whoever is in office, to do things that economists widely concur would cause a massive collapse in corporate earnings. You do that in a situation where somebody just turned your headlights out, in effect, and you get these huge swings in the market and potentially triggering what I would refer to, for lack of better terms, a false bear market. A false bear market is one when there's no economic reason for it, but it occurs anyway, and it occurs anyway simply because people are scared. By the way, I want to emphasize again, bear markets don't start when people are terrified. They start when people are overconfident, and people are anything but overconfident at this point. So
right.
We're not. I don't think we're headed into a major bear market.
And if people doubt that, think back to 19. Well, if you read back to 1929, read back to 2006 and 2007, and read what people were saying. There was not terror. There was, this is going to keep going and nothing can stop it. That was the mentality. Right now, if you pull up the television and you're watching news, you're going to hear about how bad things are. But one thing that's going to be missing from that message is details about what's bad. I mean, beyond government shutdown, well, there's no permanent damage from that as long as we get it started back up. And that's a big thing.
Well, there's a confidence issue at this point.
Right, and that's it. It's confidence.
And frankly, heard on the street and other articles in the Wall Street Journal where they actually talk to the people who are doing the trading, say if we're shutting down the government for some new reason, what's going to happen in March when we hit the debt ceiling?
When we have an old reason that keeps getting reawakened.
And the other thing is, if you're an investor, and I presume if you're listening to the show, you probably are.
That implies someone's listening to the show.
Yes, it is. Then be assured there's no place to hide. Let me give you an example. The Vanguard has an index fund that tries to emulate the entire bond market. And it's a pro, and I discovered many times when I read articles in reputable publications like the Wall Street Journal and so on, and they show the bond index, they're actually simply quoting this fund. And the point is that fund, if you'd invested in that year to date, you'd be down 0.5%. If you spent none of the money, you took none of the income, you reinvested all the income, and you don't count the fact that you've been paying taxes on it, you're down 0.5%. There is literally no place to hide other than cash where you're going to get about 2%. Had you gone to bonds 5 years ago, you'd have gotten a return less than inflation over that period. And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hello. Caller? All right.
No color.
So you could say, well, I could go to bonds, or I could normally you could go to gold, except gold's down about 5% this year. You could go to, there's lots of places this year you could have gone and avoided the fact that the market is down 7%, but you've been down about as much wherever you went. This is one of those, that is, by the way, is a strong sign that whatever is going on is a matter of uncertainty, because there's a sell-off, and this is really strange, a sell-off going on in bonds. There's a sell-off going on in stocks. There's a sell-off going on in gold. You, across the board, people are fleeing to cash. Why are they fleeing to cash? And why is the price of gold not shot up? Because fundamentally, the U.S. dollar is the gold standard. It's many years ago, when I was a kid, I used to hear the term sound as the dollar. And then when inflation went nuts for a while, we didn't hear that anymore. And I think basically it is a good position today. The Federal Reserve is in the business of regulating the value of the dollar, and they're doing an astonishingly good job of it, all things considered. And as a result, around the world, people are buying the dollar. The matter of fact, this year, if you look at global investments, one of the smartest things you could have done at the beginning of the year is just bought dollars and held them for the year, because the dollar is up something approaching 6% against a basket of world currencies for the year, which is certainly a lot better than a lot of other investments have done. And by the way, if you hold dollars, like in the bank, on a global basis, you can take some degree of satisfaction in knowing that your investment on a global basis is up around 6%. And if you got 2% on it, which you could have with CDs, then you're up around 7% for the year. It doesn't show, because we measure in dollars. It looks like you've got the same dollars you started with. But this is one of those situations where there was no place to hide. And that is another indication that being invested in a well-balanced, diversified portfolio is probably an excellent idea at this point. And just kind of hang in there and ride it out. And it's important, if you're taking income from it, of course, that you have a good reserve that you can draw on so you don't have to liquidate equities in a down market.
I'm going to change the subject, if that's all right.
Do that.
There's some data that's recently been coming out, and it has to do with public employees, specifically teachers. They're quitting their jobs at a record rate. What is that? Why am I saying this? Well, this is something that happens when you have full employment. We've said maybe we're at full employment now. A couple of times in the last few months, when you know the unemployment rate's not dropping anymore, we're still making roughly 150,000 to 200,000 jobs out there. Where are the people coming from? Unemployment isn't dropping at this point; it's hovering right there. Where are these people coming from? And the answer is they're coming from other jobs. There are a lot of teachers in the public school system that are being offered higher paying jobs with really nice benefits to switch. And that happens when we get low unemployment. So this is one of those signs that we have reached capacity of the labor market, is that we're now taking from highly skilled jobs to employ them at other highly skilled jobs. And teaching is a highly skilled job. If you doubt me, try showing up at a school and doing it with no skills. You're going to get walked on. Doesn't matter if you're in kindergarten up to a senior in high school. If you don't have the right skill set, you're going to get flattened. It's a highly skilled job, and it's got good perks. You get a paid summer when you don't necessarily have to work. Now, that affects your overall pay. Your pay's dropped because you're working 9 months out of the year. I know teachers that work across the summer, and they get a very decent wage, but it's very decent only in comparison to what was available before. Now, jobs are raising their wages, and that's drawing teachers out of public schools, and it's drawing low-pay, high-skill jobs to a big problem. So what this means is that you need to expect property taxes to go up, because they need to raise the pay of the teachers if they want to keep them.
To put that in perspective, for the first 10 months of 2018, public educators quit at an average rate of 83 per 10,000. 83 per 10,000. Now, across the board in the United States, 231 per 10,000 is the average quit rate.
Right. Well, the thing with teachers, though, and this is important, is that that is extremely stable. This is one of the last professions where when someone goes into it, one of the reasons they're doing it is the stability of a career path. They expect to be teaching in a school when they go to teach for the rest of their lives or until they're retired. This is there aren't that many employments that still have that.
Yeah,
so that 83 looks small compared to what other jobs mm-hmm. see, but compared to teaching in general, it's really high. They usually get much less than that.
Yeah, and it's typically around 40-something, but and it's up to 80-something, and that's impressive. But, of course, teaching is one of the few, very few places left other than working for the federal government or the state government. Well, in essence, I guess they are working for the government. But, you see, they get a guaranteed retirement.
Yeah, guaranteed retirement.
Fixed benefit retirement.
Paid time off during summer, yeah. Good vacation time during spring break and Christmas time. There's a lot of perks to being a teacher, but it's a hard job. And if somebody offers you a lot of money to switch,
in many
if
cases,
it's worth it, they do.
In many cases around the country, school systems are now requiring teachers to get master's degree. They often get them on their own time. The shocker is, and once they get a master's degree, they suddenly become very employable in the rest of the economy because they're capable of, if you're capable of dealing with 30 middle school students all day.
While getting a master's degree.
While getting a master's degree, you can go to work for corporate America. It's a calling.
Yeah, yeah.
But we are at a peak in the economy. There's a lot of indications. Housing is slowing. It's been, and the other thing that's a little
Wait a minute. Do you have a fast house?
It only moves as fast as the dirt underneath it.
Yeah.
But
housing
construction has been slowing down. As a matter of fact, the you want a bear market, the residential construction firms are generally down well over 20% from their peaks last summer. And that is a long-term indicator that we may have a recession on the horizon. It's not 100% certain to cause a recession, but it is one of the earliest signals that the economy has peaked. We're getting some other interesting signals now, too, for the last several months, and we don't have the most up-to-date data on this because the Commerce Department is closed. But for the last several months, we've seen durable goods orders from manufacturers trending downward. This is what we call a worrisome sign. You may, if you've listened to this radio program for a long time, Jake does not like to call it a show. It's a listen.
You can't see it.
Why should we show it? It's a talk.
Yes, this is a radio talk.
And because it isn't really a anyway, whatever it is.
It's a show and tell. This is a radio tell.
This is a radio tell, except for the fact we're not gambling. Or else it's a mound of earth in the Middle East someplace like Tel Aviv. Anyway,
yeah.
Completely off the subject. One of the things that we talked about during the recession back in 2009, towards the end of 2009 and later summer and there on, we said the recovery is coming and it'll come powerfully because manufacturing durable goods orders were up. They were up dramatically. That means that manufacturers are looking out there and saying, interest rates are down. I want to borrow some money and buy some new equipment.
Right.
And we got a little surge of that at the beginning of the year, and then it went away. And it was a big surprise, by the way, to the people who had supported the tax cut. They assumed that the immediate ability to write off new equipment sales, new equipment purchases, would cause a huge durable goods order surge that would multiply across the economy and cause the economy to surge ahead. The problem we run into is a company does not want to buy a long-term piece of equipment that helps them manufacture more stuff when the infrastructure, meaning they can't find employees, the highways are full, there's not enough trucks, there's not enough truck drivers, the railroad systems are full. It doesn't make
capacity,
any sense
yeah.
to increase your ability to manufacture stuff if you can't deliver it somewhere. So there's a missing element in our economy that really we should have addressed years ago. And we continue to throw it off because it doesn't provide an immediate boost to the economy, and that is that our infrastructure is hurting. We need more transportation capacity, but in order to get more transportation capacity, here comes the kicker. You got to have more people. Now, admittedly, at some point, we're going to get self-driving trucks. We're going to get self-driving cars, and our existing infrastructure will help be boosted by that. But to give you an example of what I mean by the infrastructure down, Verizon, CenturyLink took a big hit this week. Big chunks of CenturyLink across the country went down because it was overloaded. 911 centers across the country couldn't take calls. Telephone systems for Verizon went out. Whole factories, whole businesses in various parts of the country that were using Verizon or using CenturyLink internet-related telephones suddenly couldn't talk to anybody. And why? Well, because we need more infrastructure. We basically have got as much data and as much equipment and as much goods being pushed through the system as the system will support at this point. And the unhappy thing is we're not doing the maintenance across the board to make sure that it keeps running, and we're not building redundancy into the system. Instead, we're pushing it to do more. This is why we get cyclical economic downturns. And we have a caller on 773-1400, and caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen. It's Chris in Georgetown.
Hello, Chris in Georgetown.
How are you?
Good. It's good to hear your voice. It's been like months.
I know. Hey, I was giving you guys a call to talk about transportation, and specifically in the food industry that I'm in, is that I'm hearing a lot of from my sources that they're having a very hard time finding drivers, mm-hmm. qualified drivers
right.
to that. One of the reasons is because the rules of the Fed, the rules, I guess, on the road is that the drivers can only drive so much
right.
and they have to, you know, stop, stuff like that. So the older drivers can't make as much money, so they're simply just not, they're walking away and finding something else to do.
Actually, Chris, they haven't tightened the rules. They've just tightened the enforcement of the rules that were already there.
Yeah, the rules okay. have been on the book for a long time, and basically, if you talk to truck drivers, and we have quite a lot, what
right.
has happened in the past is they had two or three logbooks. And when they get pulled over,
yeah.
they show the logbook right. of what they're doing right now. Well, it's being computerized now. So
right.
you can't have three. You got to have one. And that means if you were driving 19 or 20 hours a day, and some of them were, which is an extremely dangerous environment. So that's, I mean, you
right.
don't have a fender bender with a 18-wheeler.
Right.
Those don't exist. I mean, they exist, but only on the part of the truck. It's not on the part of the car that they hit. And overall, these drivers are extremely safe, but if they're driving 22 hours or 20 hours in a day, that's not safe. So,
right.
you know, and that's where we are, is that the rules have been enforced because new technologies come around to say you don't have a paper logbook anymore.
And it's not just a matter of the older drivers not driving. They're obviously not driving as many hours, but the issue boils down to the fact we just don't have enough people in the
right.
system who are willing to be trained as drivers or who have the $10,000 it takes to get the license and can pass all the drug tests and everything. This isn't what we call a natural economic constraint.
There's one other piece of this, and that's the opioid epidemic.
Right.
And that is
epidemic.
It has a disproportional effect on the truck driving
yeah.
industry.
Because a lot of the truck drivers wind up with back problems. Back problems
yeah.
create pain. Doctors prescribe pain relief, and the pain relief then becomes addictive.
And you've got a label on there that says, do not operate heavy machinery, and they test you for it. They take you
right.
into a back bathroom and have you fill up a vial, and if they see you've got opioids in your system, you can't drive.
Well, and a lot, and they're not being able to find qualified drivers either, and some of these drivers are not – they're not very good, so they don't care as much as the older drivers driving or get everything on time. And so, you know, a lot of the people in the industry are having a hard time getting product
mm-hmm.
either to the distributor, to the stores and everything else. And so, and it's not, there's nothing anybody can do. It's just what it is.
And that's what
I'm wondering at what point in time where it'll be like, okay, we're going to have automated trucks now.
It's
to
coming.
Drive things to where they are because we just can't keep up with the demand. Even if we had the drivers, they still can't keep up with the demand with all the new products coming out. So my thing is like, okay, just have a truck system that is automated that just it goes.
Well,
it's almost like a shipping.
That would be really, really good except for the fact that
getting a system that knows how to handle a little four-wheeler that cuts in front of an 18-wheeler, and whether or not to run over the which car to run over under those circumstances, we're not there yet. Now, we're getting there. We're working on it. My guess is sometime in the mid-2020s, which is very optimistic, we will see driverless trucks as the norm, start to become the norm. Matter of fact, if you want to follow this very interestingly, I find it very historically interesting, you can see the replacement of the horse-drawn wagon with the internal combustion truck that occurred in the 1920s, likely to replicate itself almost perfectly in the 2020s with the driverless truck replacing the driver truck.
Yeah, and this
but that's going to be a while coming.
Walmart has ordered 50 semi-tractor trailers from Tesla. They haven't even produced them yet. But Walmart is one place, and they've got lots and lots and lots of orders from lots and lots of different big companies that are looking exactly at this.
Right. It's coming.
And that means, you know, depending on production issues, depending on safety issues, they've already been approved in many places. Getting them on the road, you're talking now, we're not talking 5 years out anymore. We're talking 1 to 2, maybe 3 years.
We still need to put a driver in that truck.
No.
Well, I think, and there are
places they're approved
that are going driverless too.
Yeah.
I think for their deliveries, like the curbside for HEB, and I forgot who it was. I think it was a East Coast or Midwest chain account that has like small cars that they were going to start to use to deliver their groceries to their customers, and it was going to be driverless, is from what I remember. But I can't
this
remember
is the
which
point.
Account that was.
The news media is reporting small incidents of this, but getting state there's no state right now that will allow universal driverless access for anything.
They allow testing purposes in California. Mm-hmm. But Arizona has testing purposes.
Right.
They have to change the law to say for commercial purposes, and certain small municipalities in California and Arizona have opened that up. It's not that far out, though, they're going to, at the state levels, be making changes.
What I'm trying to say is right now, at this moment, you have just addressed an economic constraint, a limitation that is when you then overload that limitation. This is what's going on in the economy right now. You overload that limitation by giving a big tax stimulus to buy new stuff and manufacture new stuff when the weakest link is transportation and drivers in trucks at this moment in time.
Right.
That's what triggers a cyclical downturn that creates a recession is when you overload a piece of the economy and it breaks down.
Right.
And it's in the process of doing that. And do I think we're going to have one immediately? No. These are big, long lead times.
But I'll tell you what. When automated truck driving comes out, it's going to be when it starts really being produced, it's going to be maybe a 3 to 5 year period before it's going to be really hard to get a trucking job.
Yeah, and I don't question that. And I think in the 2020s, after the – we'll probably – and this is my best guess right now – a recession in 2020, the year 2020. During the recession is when we retool. Coming out of 2020 is when we're likely to see a massive replacement of workers in the transportation industry. And if you think about the transportation industry for a minute, that includes the people who fix vehicles, the people who fix fender benders, the people, the insurance workers, because let me tell you, if you can automate a truck, I'm sure you can automate a forklift. The people who work in the warehouses.
That's already been done at Amazon.
And we wound up 100 years ago with 30% unemployment because we replaced so many people with the internal combustion engine. I can see a very similar scenario popping up in the 2020s in the United States.
There's a piece of irony, maybe sardony. It is slightly humorous, but there are people that will not benefit from it. And that is if we think of the Teamsters Union. The Teamsters Union was a union that was put together of people that drove horses. They were teams of horses, and they were the Teamsters, and they wanted a certain amount of money. It was the equivalent of the truck drivers of the day. And then the Industrial Revolution, the internal combustion engine, made it so that the teams were gone. Well, they kept their name and they said, now we're just going to be truck drivers. And except right. that now they're doing a lot of other things. So the Teamsters Union, which is no Teamsters in it anymore, is about to be automated completely. Which will they do strikes on that? Well, the scabs will be the robots.
Will they ever find Jimmy Hoffa? Is the question.
That is a better question. Yes, his concrete boots will be found eventually.
Well, I don't know. It could be one of the great enduring mysteries of history.
Well, the car industry too is that less people are driving cars. Like I guess the millennials or newer generation coming up aren't buying as many cars, and so that's going to be a factor too where they will just either Uber it wherever they want to go, or they'll share cars, so there won't be as many cars on the road because they simply won't drive as much just won't need it either.
I think an automated Uber, only won't be called Uber probably, and competing companies will be the primary mode of transportation for individuals within the next 20 years.
Alphabet just opened its commercial version of its automated van service. And that's literally happening. A van shows up that doesn't have a driver. You get in the back seat. It takes your picture. It takes pictures of the quality of what's inside the van before you sit down and after you leave. And it takes you where you want to go. It's got a limited area. It's within one municipality. But it is an effective service, and people really love it.
But it still can't work in the rain, snow.
There's not a lot of rain and snow in that particular municipality.
But what I'm saying is we don't have a universal answer to this yet, and I think it'll be 5 years. I would say a minimum of 5 years before you start seeing the universal answer appear. But I think it's going to happen,
and
it's going to create an economic boom like nothing we've ever seen before.
One of the pain points we haven't even hit on this area, and that's that we killed 37,000 Americans on the road last year, and we're on track to beat that record this year. That's, you know, if any other non-medical issue was killing that many people, we'd have massive protests. We'd have huge numbers of people filling up the governmental areas saying, we got to fix this problem. But it's not even news when you have a multi-car pileup. It's not even covered when it shows up in the obituaries of all the little towns involved.
And sometimes it doesn't even show up.
That, to me, is a statement of a ubiquitous risk, a risk that we've just decided we can't do anything about. And once we've got the autonomous cars and we look back at the risks that we were taking, you know, the number one cause of death for children and has been for decades, automobile accidents. By far. I mean, there's no disease that comes even close to that. And we're spending billions and billions of dollars on the next lowest level diseases to say, how do we fix this? Because we can't let our kids die. And we've got car seats, but we've still got human drivers. And human drivers are dangerous. As soon as the machines are doing, I mean, people will still be able to drive if they go to special places, just like you're still able to ride your horse, but you can't do it on I-35.
Right.
You won't be able to drive your car on I-35 either. It will drive you on I-35, and that's where we're going. So that pain point and a lot of the other pain points are going to 37,000 people dying every year is not worth the millions of jobs that we have driving trucks. That's too high a price. And that means we better work hard at retraining the truck drivers, because what do we do with that? That's what caused the Great Depression, is these new technologies and the Industrial Revolution putting a lot of people out of work that were using their hands in the dirt. And the tractor came along.
And to give you a very specific on that, right now there's a critical shortage of airline pilots. I mean, a critical shortage to the point where the airlines are recruiting vigorously people with relatively low number of hours, and they'll train them, and they put them in the cockpits, and they're thinking, man, I've got a sure thing. I've got a retirement. This is going to be a wonderful place to work for a career. The problem is the same airlines are also investing billions of dollars each year in pilotless airplanes, and where the aircraft is literally flown from the ground via computer with somebody sitting in an office monitoring the flight of the airplane all the way taxiing in unloading, loading, and going back out again. And their plans right now are initially to have a single person sitting up in the cockpit to watch things.
But that's eventually probably going to change.
And I have an airline pilot who's a close friend of mine, a senior airline pilot, and she told me that FedEx has already, on international flights, has already been flying automated aircraft.
And that's not a big, oh, wow, it's not a big stretch. I mean, autopilot's been around for a long, long time.
You know,
but this fully automated is new.
Yeah, the issue is that they have a couple of people in the aircraft in case radio communications go down or satellite communications go down. But the aircraft is flying itself. Instead of having 5 to 10 people in a cargo flight, long-distance cargo flight over water, they have one or two people. And
right,
because they're not actually flying the aircraft. They don't have to. And that is, that's where you see the nose of the camel coming through the tent, to use the old aphorism.
Yeah, the tent's about to pop off.
And the plans, all the major airlines are investing literally billions of dollars in a truly automated flight, because despite all that you hear, the one major risk factor that's not well controlled in airline flight is the pilot. And so the same thing is true in cars, the same thing is true in trucks, and there's a lot of money to be made there. It's going to happen. It's going to revolutionize things. And so longer term, going into the 2020s, I expect to see an economic boom in the United States and in the world, but mainly it'll be centered in the United States, after the 2020 recession, that will be the largest economic and probably largest stock boom in the history of the world. And we're about out of time.
Yeah, we got to play some commercials. Thank you, Chris.
All right, y'all have a good New Year. Bye.
You too. We're going to play some commercials, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you'd want to join the conversation, the phone number in here is 254-773-1400, and we'll be back.
And we're back with a little more of the Personal Wealth Coach. We got about 10 minutes left in the show, and if you were listening to commercials, they didn't happen because we couldn't make them happen.
New system, and the switches were changed.
And something just changed again.
Yeah, I switched something else so that we could hear ourselves a little better.
Speaking of infrastructure, I don't know. I'm having an interesting experience right now with Google. Despite the fact that our internet connection in here is pretty fast, I've done a couple of Google searches both from home and here recently,
yes,
and they take forever. Oh, what'd you get?
I got something. Let me see if it's got commercials playing. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
My children not to participate in high school sports.
Statistics show that teenagers are likely to be healthier and stay healthier as adults if they play a sport in high school. Participating in a high school sport builds and maintains strong bones, muscles, and joints. High school athletes are also more likely to develop good eating habits. High school athletes not only have stronger bodies, their self-esteem, self-confidence, and self-discipline are strengthened too. So insightful parents aren't asking,
is it safe for my children to participate in high school sports?
Instead, they're asking,
hey, what time is the game tonight?
This message presented by the Texas University Interscholastic League and the Texas High School Athletic Directors Association.
My dad came to live with us last month, and you know, it's going pretty well.
I feel like I never have time for myself.
With him being around more, it really lets us catch up on things.
His memory isn't what it used to be.
We get up and we have coffee.
He usually wakes up at 4:30.
Then we go for a walk.
He needs lots of my attention.
I do need to keep an eye on his medications, though. That's important.
Sometimes I feel like a pharmacist.
I'd say John and the kids are adjusting pretty well.
They honestly have no idea what I'm going through.
It can be a little challenging.
Help.
But so far, so good.
I could really use just a little help.
For those dealing with the daily struggles of caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community with experts and other caregivers for advice, tips, and support. Together, let's help each other better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
They get our kids to school safely.
Okay, so walk me through how you got to this answer.
They provide critical support in the classroom.
Chicken sandwich, my favorite. They keep students nourished, so they're ready to learn.
I'm an outie.
They are there when accidents happen.
Oh, you're going to need a Band-Aid.
And they keep our schools beautiful.
School bus drivers, custodians, nurses, paraeducators, just a few of the education support professionals who help schools in Texas run smoothly every day. This is Noel Candelaria, president of the Texas State Teachers Association. They ensure that our students have a safe ride to school, healthy meals, and a clean environment to learn. So take a moment to say thank you to the ESPs in your school.
A message from the Texas State Teachers Association.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, this time after actually having done some commercials. And the stars of this show are Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone number in here remains 254-773-1400. We got about 7 minutes left. I want to talk a little bit about other aspects of the market as we close this out. During the Federal Reserve's chairman's news conference recently, he released a lot of documents, and I went through them. And they anticipate the short-term Fed rate being up around 3%, a little above 3% by the middle of next year. And that's the short-term lending rate between banks. It's the one they set. They consider 2.8 to be neutral, which means they intend to go into a slight tightening because the economy is overheating, which is what they need to do to stabilize things and extend the recovery, extend the expansion as long as they can. That's their job, and to stabilize the dollar. The problem is the 10-year U.S. Treasury note yield right now is 2.719. Now, what does that mean? The 2.5 is where the short-term Fed rate is. 2.719 is the 10-year note yield. And when the short-term rates get higher than the long-term rates, it is really, really hard on the banks because basically they're having to pay higher interest rates to short-term deposits than they're getting on longer-term loans. It also is a indicator that so far has been we've never had a recession without having an inverted yield curve. And the probabilities right now look very, very high, barring some dramatic change of events, mainly out of Washington, D.C. It looks very, very strongly like we will have an inverted yield curve by the summer. The inverted yield curve normally precedes a recession by 6 months to a year. Sometimes it can happen a little quicker than that. An important thing also to recognize is the conference board's index of leading economic indicators is still positive. Again, that is a signal that over the next 6 months, the probability of a recession is extremely low. Over the next year, it's still low. So we are probably, all the indicators suggest we're about a year away from a possible or even probable recession. Could it be avoided at this point? Yes, but I really don't think the things that we could do at the political level to avoid it are likely to happen because there's a lot of egos involved right now. So we've got in the bond market, there's some strong indications that we are, again, we probably hit our peak in this economic cycle in October. And that doesn't mean it's about to collapse. It means it will run along, and I suspect, there's no guarantees here to this either, that this is a lot like 1998. In 1998, we got a sudden, severe set of volatility, downturns in the market at the end of 1998. And in 2000 is when the recession that started that went from 2000 to 2002. And I suspect we're running along that cycle, Now, can you time the market based on that? No. Why do I say that? Timing the market looks very, very logical in retrospect. And look, when this happened, if I had done that. However, the results that I've come up with are pretty simple. Nobody has ever successfully done it. And when nobody, and people with lots of degrees and lots of computers and large staff of people doing research, have been unable to successfully time the market over the years without having it blow up in their faces and them lose their money, that is a strong indicator that timing the market doesn't work. Moving on to so that's an important thing to recognize is where we are in the economic cycle. Now, what can you do? Well, there's probably going to be a rebound after this correction. During that rebound, take a hard look at your portfolio and make sure you have it well diversified. Don't go ultra conservative because timing the market doesn't work. But look at it and make sure it's where you want it to be and that you have a plan for what happens when the bear market and recession comes. And I say when the bear market comes, they do. They happen. The fact that we haven't had a bear market in a decade doesn't mean we're never going to have a bear market again. It means that it's going to happen. It's going to happen at a time when nobody expects it, which certainly isn't now because everybody thinks we're about to have one. And it's going to happen pretty severely, but not terribly. It won't be a secular bear market. It looks very much like a cyclical bear market. Coming out of it, and this is the good news to keep your eye on, it's almost impossible to predict the recovery, but it happens. And when the recovery happens, I firmly believe that we are in for the equivalent of the Roaring Twenties in the 2020s. We're in for a period of dramatic economic growth, dramatic economic innovation. That's not to say that a lot of people won't be hurt by it. If you're at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder, if you are a person with whatever your job is, if you're bored doing it every day, whatever, some repetitious job,
it's probably not going to be around any longer.
You're gonna get replaced by a computer or a robot or whatever.
And we don't know where that's going to go long term. We could have great new innovations with jobs that nobody knew would exist.
Oh, I'm sure we will.
Which is what happened the Industrial Revolution. I mean, most of the jobs that people do today are not jobs that even existed back then.
So we've got a series of things happening down the road, but here's the key. If you're dependent upon an investment portfolio and you need to use that to live on in retirement and you need to see it be healthy, then don't get caught up in the emotion of the moment. Don't get caught up in the fear that's going on right now, and don't get caught up on the excesses that are going forward. If your plan for your investment portfolio is to draw more than 4% a year out of it, you better have a pretty aggressive portfolio and be willing to take a tremendous amount of short-term volatility when it hits you square between the eyes. It's important to have a reserve, a good cash reserve, a good what we call dry powder position, so that when the market turns down, if you're depending upon monthly withdrawals from your portfolio, you've got some place that you can take the money that doesn't affect your equity balances in the portfolio. And typically, the downturns in the market in a cyclical downturn last about 18 months. They can last longer, so you need to have a backup plan to that. And it's kind of like having a plan for if you're disabled, having a plan for if you die, what's going to happen to the rest of the people in your family. That's called an estate plan. If you don't have that, then you're being relatively foolish, because I can guarantee that everybody will eventually die. And when they die, most of us are going to leave somebody behind. And if you haven't made the documentation up to smooth that transition to get things to go where they need to go when they need to go there, you're probably hurting some people. And the same thing is true when it comes to bear market. Bear markets are kind of like death. They're going to happen. And they're going to happen at irregular times, and they're going to happen when everybody is irrationally exuberant. So don't think you can wait until the last minute to time it and figure out how to use it. And we are officially out of time, but yeah. I'm still talking.
We're still talking because the newfangled technology, which was replacing all these jobs, went on strike. So we had to step in. Does that make us scabs?
I don't know. Well, I don't know.
I think we're scabs.
It all depends on
horrible.
It all depends on whether the algorithms had a union.
Yeah. Are we ready to go?
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take it off. Until next year, Happy New Year, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.
And this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.